This is Fantasy Sports Today, NHL.com's Pete Jensen has been joining us for the last few weeks to get you prepared for your NHL fantasy season. So we're going to bring him back, of course. We haven't talked about defensemen yet. Hey, Pete, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure. Good to see you.
Yes, great to see you. Let's talk about your top 10. Ashley wants to talk about Brett Burns. But number one, you got Erik Karlsson in there. Brett Burns at number two. PK Subban at number three. Chris Letang. Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Dustin Byfuglien. Roman Josi. Drew Doughty. Shane Gostisbehere. And John Carlson to rank out your top 10. There's been just a little bit of debate in the office, depending on what league, you know, your settings, your format, that Brett Burns is really the number one defenseman in fantasy hockey last season.
And in some instances, a top five player at all.
Depend, yes.
No matter what the position, this guy had 353 shots on goal. The Sharks have a top power play. They've had it for years. But I want to know, how come then, based on all of this information, why you have him second to Erik Karlsson?
Well, in a standard league, you look at what Erik Karlsson did last season. He took his own offensive productivity to a new level. 82 points in 82 games. We haven't seen that in the NHL in over 10 seasons. So it's rare point production from Erik Karlsson, puts him at a slight advantage. If you're going with a hits league, though, Brent Burns has that slight edge because he really provides rare coverage in points, power play points, and shots on goal. As you mentioned, he was second in the league to only Ovechkin, and Brent Burns just really turned into a different. I know he looks like a beast. He's a scary looking dude, but he's an intimidating one on the ice. But he was really some sort of a fantasy beast last season with how he took that shots on goal production up a notch. So in a hits league, go with Burns, and in a points only league or a standard league, go with Karlsson. But I would honestly take those guys 5 and 6 in a standard Yahoo league.
Yeah,
I think they're right up there with the best forwards.
So is that your strategy? Is that how it lies? I mean, we could touch on PK Subban too. A disappointing season from him. He just in Montreal in general, he got hurt down the stretch, didn't play, only a handful of goals. We weren't used to seeing that from PK. Obviously dealt to Nashville for Shea Weber, who we'll touch on in a little bit. But well, how does your strategy lie when you're picking defensemen? Because for the most times, I mean, Karlsson will go in the first round, Burns will go early second, PK is just shortly after him. How does your strategy lie with defensemen?
I mean, forward positions are so much deeper than defensemen, and I'm really defenseman has grown on me so much, especially this past year. You look at Letang, how good he was under Mike Sullivan. He was top 5 in the NHL in points. There were 4 guys last season among the top 15 overall players. Then you also look at someone like Ekman-Larsson, who's right up there, especially in keeper leagues with the Coyotes improving. So I think in the top, say, top 6 rounds, you have to get 2 defensemen at this point. If you want to wait a little bit longer, you could still get high upside guys like Yandel or Ristolainen a little bit later, but I really am a big advocate of getting defensemen early, especially Chris Letang, who in some leagues is dropping to the 3rd or 4th round.
How do you think PK does in Nashville? Do you think he's just the same defenseman? Do you think maybe Nashville, Peter Laviolette, will just let him buck and let him do his own thing?
I think you really have to consider the motivation this guy is going to have, because he has been slighted this summer, not only by his team, the Montreal Canadiens, who traded him away after a collapse, but also by Team Canada, who left him off the roster even when they had to make a replacement. So I think his motivation is going to be key. You can make the argument that he's going to be going to a tougher division, and that's fair, but I think the system he's joining, and especially the top power play unit with Roman Josi, who had 60-plus points last season, I think they both have a chance if they stay healthy. Even if they play separate from each other at even strength, the damage that those two could do on the power play could be enormous. So I really like Subban, even ahead of Chris Letang, just because of in standard leagues, he's provided some excellent category coverage in the past. Remember a couple of years ago, we were always debating between Karlsson and Subban for top overall D, and Subban also has the most power play points in the NHL among defensemen since 2012-13, and that was for a less than stellar Montreal power play unit many of those years.
While making his debut in the top 10, Shane Gostisbehere, 9 overall, playing for the Flyers, 44 points in 62 games last season. Ooh. And he didn't even join. Yeah, he 62 games only. He was in the minors for the first month and a little bit. So are you expecting him just to take that next step forward? That's why you have him ranked so high?
He could. I mean, I'm a little concerned to take him among the top 50, but outside the top 50, the potential is extremely clear for Goss Despair. Like we were talking about with Burns, he's on a great power play unit in Philly with Voracek, Claude Giroux, who has the most points in the league since 2010-11. You also have Simmons and Braden Schenn on that unit. Mm-hmm. So, and it seems like he has that spot locked down. He has surpassed Mark Streit as the main man, offensively speaking, on the blue line for the Flyers. So I really like Goss Despair a lot. He is young and is, you know, potentially headed toward a maybe some sophomore regression if defenses become more in tune with how to stop him or contain him. But I still think he has an enormous ceiling if he plays a full season at anything close to the point production that he showed last year.
Pete, unfortunately, we only have about 30 seconds left. Is number 16 in your defenseman rankings, Shea Weber, coming off a season where he was fourth in goals with 20, the most power play goals in 14. You see there your 11 to 20 rankings. One of 22 defensemen to have 100 plus shots, hits, and blocks. Do you think he's in for a little bit of a decrease in his season going to Montreal?
I would take him a little higher than where I had him on that list if it's a hits and blocks league, because I think he's still very valuable, usually getting over 150 in each. But standard leagues, you look at a number of categories he regressed in last season. And to be honest, I think his points, and especially power play points, will regress this season, going from Josi as his defensive pair to Andrei Markov, who's still serviceable, but nowhere near the same caliber of puck mover. So Montreal's power play is going to change a lot.
We gotta go, Pete. We gotta run, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Sorry.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. As promised, Blake Murphy from Raptors Republic joins us now, and it's honestly blasphemy, Blake. This is the first time we've talked fantasy basketball all year, basically, since the season ended.
Yeah, I mean, the season's just starting, so I guess now's the time.
Now is the time.
Yeah, we're maybe a little behind the ball.
We're a little behind the eight ball, so we're going to catch you up right away, and we're going to jump right in. We're going to start with the Yahoo guard rankings. And leading the way, Steph Curry, Russ, James Harden, point guard James Harden, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, John Wall, Kyrie, Kyle, and Clay rounding out the top 10. And we're going to start with Steph Curry, of course. Depending on where you look, him and Russell Westbrook, they flipped the 1 and 2 rankings. But for me, when I look at Golden State, there are so many mouths to feed. How can you, for me, it's almost like, how can you have them so high? Like, one to me is out of reach.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Steph Curry as the number one option. I would have Russell Westbrook number one myself. Points guard James Harden is obviously going to be a guy who's going to get a lot of counting stats. Westbrook in particular, if you play in a league that's eight and dozen count turnovers against you, that's an extra boost for him. But Steph Curry, I don't think there's a ton to worry about. You look at the potential minutes. He played, 32 minutes 2 years ago, and he was still the number two ranked fantasy option. He played 34 minutes last year, and he was number one. So maybe the touch has come down a little bit, but then you're just looking at assists and maybe even efficiency going up. So I think Steph will be fine, just not at number one.
I was going to say, do you think his role now turns into more of a traditional point guard, and maybe even there's rumbling that Klay leads the team in scoring this season?
Yeah, I don't think Klay Thompson is going to lead the team in scoring necessarily. You're still looking at a higher where Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are two of maybe the best three players in basketball. So, you know, Klay Thompson is going to get a ton of easy, easy open looks, and he might lead the league in three-pointers this year. But leading the team in scoring, I'm not sure. It's Curry's team, and Durant is, Kevin Durant, maybe the second best player in the world.
You get the first overall pick. Do you go Russell Westbrook? Because for me, he has 29 triple-doubles over the last 2 years. The next person that's closest to him is Draymond Green with 14.
Yeah, I like Russell Westbrook as the number one pick. I'm a huge Russ guy, and I'm really excited to see him just go full John Wick on the NBA after Kevin Durant's left. The turnovers are like maybe a concern, and then the field goal percentage isn't always elite, but he is going to do so much from a scoring perspective, from an assist perspective. He's going to fill it across the board, and he get you steals too. There's really not a lot that Russell Westbrook isn't going to do this year.
Someone whose ADP ranges, depending on where you look, John Wall, he's quite interesting. He not only had one surgery, he had two surgeries, different procedures on either knee throughout the season. His hope is that when he comes back, he's going to be more explosive like he was at the beginning of his career. But his coach is saying, Scott Brooks, we're not going to rush him back. So first of all, you might be looking at missed time at the beginning of the season if you draft him high. Second of all, you don't know. Knee injuries, we've seen Derrick Rose. You know what I mean? Derrick Rose is literally literally the caution sign for knee injuries. So what do you think about John Wall this season?
I think a lot of it's going to come down to your personal risk preference. If you're okay taking a bit of a gamble in the mid to late second round, John Wall's a guy who, you know, he's going to average close to 10 assists, if not over 10 assists, and the scoring's there. And if Bradley Beal's healthy at the same time, which is an enormous if for both of them, obviously, but the offense could be pretty good with those two working together. But again, it comes down to your risk preference. If you're someone who has an appetite for that risk and you want to take them late in the second, you can probably justify it. But if you're someone who's not, and you're in a league of people who also aren't risk-seeking, you might be able to get John Wall far later than his historical value would suggest.
Imagine fourth round John Wall. Jump all over it. Let's talk about some of the forwards that you want to jump all over as we look at the top 10 rankings. KD, the second best player in the league according to Blake Murphy, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Paul George, Giannis, Draymond Green, Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge, rounded out by Melo. We're going to start with Kawhi Leonard. Every time I say his name, I want to just be like, Kawhi. Quiet Leonard. Tim Duncan lists Spurs, old Tony Parker Spurs, older Manu Ginobili Spurs. What kind of step can he take this year? He's been so amazing and gotten better and better each season. Do you expect him to kind of progress even further this year?
I don't know if he actually takes a statistical leap forward. Last year he averaged 21, 7, and 3, something in that neighborhood. The steals are great. He gets some blocks from as far as small forwards go, and then he's pretty efficient in terms of percentages. So, you know, Kawhi is kind of already functioning as a top-level guy, as a guy who's a bubble first-round pick. I don't know how much higher that goes because that's not necessarily how the Spurs like to operate.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, he's the guy there now. Like, it's his team now, and, you know, as Parker and Ginobili continue to step back, there might be a few more touches for him. But there's also LaMarcus Aldridge to feed, and they added Pau Gasol, too. So it's not like, you know, we're not talking 4 or 5 extra shots a game.
No, and the Spurs, you can never really be sure what Popovich is going to do. He's like Bill Belichick. You kind of just can't even try and get inside his head because you'll drive yourself crazy.
Maybe it's Kyle Anderson's team now.
Well, LeBron James, the Cavs are still his team, but it's interesting because we're used to him being said a number one pick overall for so many years. Now, people are thinking maybe like late first round, mid to late first round, just because he's going to be rested a bit more, and we've seen a bit of a regression in terms of his playing time, over the last few years.
Yeah, we definitely haven't seen a regression in terms of LeBron's play.
Sorry,
as we
I
saw.
I
know. Look, there's a risk sometimes that you can overthink these kind of things. With a guy like LeBron, who has been at this level for so long, he's definitely still a first-round pick. But if you want to talk about the resting, yeah, the last 2 years he ranked 9th and 12th in overall value because he played 76 and 69 games. And last year, you know, if you play in a head-to-head format, he missed 2 games in March and 2 games in April. So as you're, you know, going down the stretch, he was sitting out a little bit. And the Cavs are not going to focus on anything but the playoffs. So they're not going to be in a position where, you know, where they're playing with anything on the line. So moderate risk late in the year, but otherwise it's LeBron James.
Are there any other forwards that we had on that board that you think could probably project higher than their ADP?
Yeah, Paul Millsap is a guy who every year I don't really understand why people aren't more high on him. The last 2 seasons he finished 15th and 10th in overall value. Now his ADP is 18th. And on top of that, Al Horford's gone. And while they replace him with Dwight Howard, you know, those offensive touches, it's probably going to run a little bit more through Millsap. You know, Jeff Teague's gone and Dennis Schroeder's going to get a lot of that action too, but Paul Millsap is kind of the guy on offense now, and he's played at a bubble first round value the last 2 years, and people aren't drafting him like that. This guy's really, really good.
Do you think he's underrated similar to Jonas Valanciunas, or do you think Jonas Valanciunas deserves his reputation?
I think Valanciunas, any optimism, and I've been asked about him a few times as the Raptors gear up, any optimism, whereas with Millsap, he has performed at that level. Here, Valanciunas, you're projecting where he's going to go. The big thing with Valanciunas is so far through a couple of preseason games, the Raptors are having him work with the second unit a lot more, which is really encouraging because you look at a team that has Lowry and DeRozan, Valanciunas is the third option. If he's propping up the second unit a little bit more, that's a good way to get him a higher usage.
Welcome to to Fantasy Sports Today. Very excited for the first time to have on the show Coach Nick of BasketballBreakdown.com. And if you follow him on Twitter or look at his YouTube channel or subscribe to it, you'll know that he has eyes all around the league and is doing some great work that no one else is really doing. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, Ashley. How's it going today?
Really, really good. I'm very excited to have you on the show. We were talking yesterday that we haven't really dove into basketball yet, even though it's just around the corner. So we're excited to get started.
Absolutely. I can't believe it's already here.
I know. Thank goodness, though. Okay, let's talk about the Golden State Warriors since everyone's talking about them. They were a team that really shared the ball well last year, despite having the perennial all-star in Steph Curry, backed by someone who you might have heard of, Klay Thompson, pretty good in his own right. And then in the offseason, they went out and got Kevin Durant after their epic collapse in the NBA Finals. For a team that needs to feed its stars a little bit, how do you see him fitting into this, and how have you seen them play in the preseason? Have you liked it?
Oh, it's been all hashtag basketball because they're getting, you know, I kind of joke that Kevin Durant has moved more in the half court in like one preseason game than he had all last year in OKC. And I think that this is why he wanted to come. He realized that the movement and the spacing would really open things up and make it just fun to play, which could very well be an indictment about how he played in OKC. Maybe there was a little bit less fun going on there, despite the success, and there's no question that they might take them, you know, 15, 20 games to kind of figure out who the alpha dog is and share that ball a little bit better. But what we've seen so far in the preseason has been nothing short of fantastic.
Fantasy-wise, it makes it a little bit risky to kind of trust any of these one guys day in and day out. But definitely for Kevin Durant, his efficiency should shoot right up this season.
I think so. I think he has a shot at not like maybe leading the team in assists, but I would suspect he'd get more assists in this year than he did other years, because what I'm seeing is the opening of the lane is so wide for him on that on those kickouts from like guys like Steph Curry that he is driving. And he's always been a willing passer, so I suspect that the guys like Draymond and Zaza will be open on little dump-off passes for layups, and I would be surprised if he didn't get, you know, five a game at least there, and then he's already going to shoot out of this world, I'm sure, from three-point land. And then that said, even a guy like Klay Thompson, he might lead the team in scoring because he's the one who's going to get so many open shots in this offense.
Andrew Bogut hit the road. So did Festus Ezeli. And you mentioned Zaza Pachulia, who came in. He was almost averaging a double-double in Dallas. What do you think this does for him being on this team? Less focus on offense and maybe more of an impact on the defensive end?
I don't know how much of an impact besides rebounds he's going to give you on the defensive end. He's not much of a rim protector, not really great laterally. But he'll grab rebounds, and that's good. I don't think he'll block too many shots. And we'll have to see how many minutes he plays because, you know, they're going to have a lot of games where they blow teams out. And so the starters are going to rest, and I'm sure he's going to be one of those guys they want to protect a little bit for the playoffs. So it's tough. That said, I do think he's going to get a lot of garbage points, just like dump off passes and little shots around the rim, and so he might actually, you know, easily get into 10 points a game.
Okay, let's talk about the New York Knicks, and you can't talk about the Knicks without talking about the triangle offense, but Jeff Hornacek is now the head coach there, and he wants to implement that up-tempo Phoenix offense that was so good to him. Do you think that there's going to be a way to somehow combine elements of the two and make Phil Jackson happy?
So far, I've been looking through a lot of their footage yesterday and today, and I've been really surprised at how much, you know, pure triangle they're running. I'm a triangle coach, so I recognize it right away. In fact, they're using a lot of stuff that I wouldn't even think is sort of the modern version of the triangle, so I'm surprised that Jeff Hornacek has put it in, you know, so rigidly. It doesn't look like Derrick Rose is really adjusting that well, even though they ran it a bunch in Chicago with Thibodeau, and yet Rose was quoted in the paper last week as saying it's all foreign to him, which is completely foreign to me because he ran it 20% of the time. So there's some really weird stuff happening with him there. Jennings looked better to me than Rose in the offense, reading it and cutting out of it and getting better shots. So that's a real revelation to me. We'll have to see. It's really early. They probably had 4 days of training camp to put this thing in, and they're going to have to be a process. But for right now, I'm definitely not so excited about what the Knicks are going to be looking like in the regular season.
Do you think that you mentioned Brendan Brandon Jennings. And with the whole rape trial surrounding Derrick Rose, he might not even be with the team at certain points. Is this a real opportunity for Brandon Jennings, who's used to starting? He started about 420 of his 460 career games or something like that. This is an opportunity for him to be sneakily productive fantasy-wise.
Oh, absolutely. Especially because you got to, you know, Rose's injury pass is also a factor. I hate to say it. I like to assume everyone is going to be healthy for 82 games, but with Rose, you can't really make that assumption. So Brandon Jennings should get a great opportunity. And of course, Jennings is coming off of major catastrophic injuries that, you know, guys have come back from, but usually not as well as they had before. Luckily, he's young enough and we're in a medical science miracle era now. So he, you know, he's looking good. And if that holds up, he should get some good minutes and some solid numbers without question.
Chicago was bottom third in scoring last year, middle of the pack in defense. And then they went and added Wade, Rondo. They drafted Denzel Valentine to join Jimmy Butler. But for me and Jimmy Butler owners in the fantasy community or people that are targeting him in drafts, it kind of moves him away from his natural guard position. How do you think this is going to affect him and their offense?
Well, I've gone through a little bit of footage so far in the preseason, and I've seen some of the normal, you know, weave things that we notice in a Hoiberg offense. I have noticed some triangle, which is really kind of startling to me. Automatics in the corner for pick and rolls. And so, you know, it looks like the shots they want to get are there, even though they really don't have a lot of shooting in that first, in that, certainly in the starting lineup. So what I have seen, though, is Butler being able to, like, get to the basket and kick out, which he's usually been pretty good at. So I would imagine that Butler is still going to be able to find a lot of his opportunities to get some buckets, probably not like 20, but I would be surprised if he was below, like, you know, 17, 18 a game. But it looks to me like he'll be able to still generate assists on kickouts to guys like McDermott who are spacing. So he actually might get a few more assists this year than we were used to seeing.
So you don't think bringing someone like Wade in, a veteran who has to get his touches at some points in the season, could frustrate him? Because now that Derrick Rose is gone, the natural thing to think is that this is Jimmy Butler's team. Then they bring in someone like Wade, they bring in someone like Rondo, who, like, evaporates assists. Do you think that he could be frustrated at all?
Wade has said all the right things so far, and he seemed to be able to understand how that worked in Miami. After a little while, remember, they struggled, and then he finally capitulated and let LeBron be the man. Now, Jimmy Butler is not LeBron, so I think it'll be an issue, but it looks to me like Hoiberg is going to be able to balance it out with play calling and simply give Wade the play calls, like to start the game and early on and out of timeouts, that gets them the touches and the shots that he feels like he needs, and then Butler can have a little bit more free reign during the motion parts of their offense. So I think that there's a lot more paths where they can make it work and have it balanced than there are paths where we're going to see Butler and Wade, like, butt heads a little bit too much. So I'm optimistic that they're going to be able to make that work.
That's good news for Chicago fans with the new regime, with Joakim Noah gone, Pau Gasol, he's gone too. So hopefully they can get it together more quickly than, I guess, the alternative, especially for the fans over in Chicago. But Boston was one of my favorite teams to watch towards the end of the season in particular, and Isaiah Thomas was a big reason for that. But the biggest problem for the Celtics was their interior. Jared Sullinger gone, he's with the Raptors now. And then they pick up Al Horford. They sign him for 4 years, $118 million. And for me, he can do it all. He's someone that has been very impressive in the preseason as well.
Oh, without question. They've really got some nice action with him and Isaiah Thomas on across the top with some sort of, like, passes and then hand off back to him, which is almost like a running pick and roll. And he rolls and he's either popping or rolling to the basket. So tremendous upgrade over Sullinger without question. And that's going to make them jump up into that standings. I would be surprised if they're not competing for that third spot in the Eastern Conference. Horford should have a fantastic year. Okay, of course, as long as he's healthy. And they really should make a jump. So I'm all in on the Celtics this year. They're going to make it that significant step. They've already had a little bit of playoff experience to make them a little bit more of a veteran team. And then you add a guy like Horford, he's been fitting in fantastically.
I agree with you on every point, Coach. Thank you so much for your time. You're so amazing. Everyone, check out Coach Nick, basketballbreakdown.com, and his YouTube channel, full of great things. Coach, we'll talk to you again soon.
You got it. Thanks.